Hello, everyone. Before I start the episode, I wanted to say thank you to everyone who has listened, downloaded, and shared this podcast. We are always trying to improve, and all the feedback you have given us has been great. I would also like to encourage you to subscribe to our daily newsletter to stay up to date on the newest podcast episodes, industry insights, and Mercator Advisor Group commentary. Again, thank you to everyone who comes and listens to our episodes, and now, on with the show. Welcome to the Payments Journal Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Mack, and today we're going to be talking about contextual banking. And to help me with that conversation, I have Herbert De Ruyter, the head of digital from IGTB. Herbert, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Ryan. It's a pleasure to be here.
So now to get things started here, what is contextual banking and how does it work?
Contextual banking is pretty much what happens when a bank starts listening to its customer and when it starts paying attention to the details, the situation, or the journey, which in short is pretty much the context of a client and the way how those contexts will fit into the service that a bank provides. So typically, or historically, if you look to the way how banks offer their services, it's mostly starting with their core system as the center of the universe. And on the other side, you see that the capabilities that are being exposed through various self-service channels are pretty much a reflection of that. In the world of contextual, it's user journey first. That means that those self-service needs are connected to capabilities and services the bank provides, and that drastically, I would say, reduce the self-service experience to that. Factoring in, if you take the user journey approach, the context and the intent that the user has, how it wants to consume those services from a bank. So with contextual banking, the digital offering, and mostly my background, of course, is digital, seems to really understand or even anticipate what the user is trying to achieve and to kind of upsell and cross-sell directly at the right moment and when the need is pretty much immediate. And of course, more on that later, cross-selling and upsell for a bank is quite hard. So we try to connect the dots on that part. What we try to do in the context of contextual banking is to take a kind of a data-driven kind of vision, taking its cues, and a lot of the inspiration that we at least put in our products are coming from pioneering platforms like Amazon, Siri, and even maybe better, Google Assistant, and using client and transaction data to render the way how transaction banking services are provided. And this could be anything from, for example, proactively identify an account deficit, or for example, the way how we allow and the bank house, how it can proactively rectifying those. And of course, as everybody is doing, we're using some mix of artificial intelligence and predictive analytics to kind of drive and to fine tune those services in the way how they're provisioned. Other area where we come up later is in the world of payments, and where we have developed ways how, for example, it's not about the execution of the payment, but just understanding the context of what kind of payment it is. Looking at things like speed, convenience, irrevocability, risk, and so on. If you factor in those data points, there's a lot of ways how better help or better the bank can help some customers executing those services.
Great. So I think you touched upon it quite a bit there in terms of what problems contextual banking solves. But let's get a little bit more specific in terms of what it's solving for banks and then also what it's solving for corporates.
Yep, that's a very good point. At first, from banks. Banks live in a world where they want to become or remain, let's say, trustful advisors. And of course, if you walk through the various segments, particularly in my world of corporate banking, of course, those needs are not universal. The way how the bank can become a trustful advisor for a big multinational is, of course, differently than it does for an SME. I think most of the drivers that we have encountered banks is partly the fear of commoditization, particularly with open banking. And there's a risk or a perception that the bank, when it provides only its services through an endpoint, which we call an API, the bank becomes pretty much a power outlet. That means I can have my energy out of the wall, but as a corporate or even as a consumer, it's very intransparent, and even I wouldn't care anymore who the provider of those energy sources look like. And similar to the bank, like I said, with the whole open banking movement, we're through mandate, like in Europe, or through market mechanisms in other countries, like for example the US, banks have the chance to pretty much become a commodity. So, and the counter reaction to that is also in contrary to what we see, for example, banks serving multiple or the bigger kind of corporates in the end, which traditionally have a host-to-host relationship, or in the future, more and more an API relationship. In those channels, it's very hard to cross-sell or say supply knowledge and value to this corpus. So I think a lot of the movements where you see contextuality kicking in at the banks, it's their way to supply additional value by harvesting the data and the intelligence you have in the relationship with those corporates or almost even to consumers. So I think that's one of the big pushes from the banks, why they're adopting these kind of concepts in their strategy.
Now, taking a look at contextual banking, how does that work in the context of cash management?
Yeah, that's a very good point. Cash management is quite a complex animal. Where you still see where I started, where the capabilities that are provided from the banks to the corporate are first of all very scattered. If I talk mostly with corporates, they get very confused, and it's very time consuming to just by default consume the services because they have to log in from mostly six or seven applications. So information is very scattered. That's by default. You see corporates relying heavily on Excel sheets to consolidate or reconcile all the information that they need, particularly on the treasury side. And the second thing, those data points are very siloed. So if you, for example, take in the context of cash management, there's so many use cases, so interesting and so easy to solve. Take, for example, an international future payment. In the world, if you look to the world of banks, what they supply there is, of course, you can make a future international payment, but what about the exposure or the FX risk that you will have as a corporate? So in that moment, you have to think, first of all, what's any if do I have any currency available in one of my accounts? And if not, what should I do? Should I, for example, open up, let's say, a Sing dollar account for making those payments? Or do I need to have a forward contract on my currencies and so on? So the corporate is pretty much forced in such a scenario to think and first of all look to the various instruments that he has available to cover his risk there. And he also pretty much have to go into two or three silos, an FX silo, a payment silo, and a cash silo to kind of leverage or activate those instruments. So why not, for example, say the bank tells the corporate and say, oh, if you want to make a future payment in 5 weeks from now, first of all, there's some volatility in that currency. Secondly, you don't have any Sing dollars in this case sitting in one of your accounts. So our recommendation is to the nature of the transaction you're trying to place, these are the instruments we would recommend you to use to instantly make that payment and have coverage for your risk instead of going to three or four applications or buying free products from the bank itself to just enable that. I think that's a very good kind of combination in the world of cash management. We see a lot of those complexities constantly being exposed by the bank to the corporate. So cash management is definitely an almost an ideal world or an ideal scenario where there's so many of those complexity to be resolved. The same thing as and similarly is in the world of payments, that payment execution versus understanding the intent of what the corporate tries to pay for and what kind of rails do I put the execution of my payment on. In our world, and we took pretty much the analogy with the FedEx model to say, and let's say you have two boxes of goods you want to move from A to B. And typically you would say, You bring it to the FedEx office, they take handle of it, you pick what way you want to transport that, and it probably gets moved to the ship or to into an airplane and so on. So our philosophy here is if you really, if I was FedEx and FedEx would really ask the corporate to say, can I open this box, is what's in there? And you see, for example, in one side there's just perishable flowers, let's say, and the other one is scrap metal. If FedEx would be the trustful advisor to, in this case, his client, it would say, hey, if you take those perishable flowers, let's put them into a well-cooled kind of container in the belly of a 747, and I'm paying you $1.50, or you have to pay me $1.50 for that, versus the scrap metal, let's put it on a ship because it's not disposable, may take more time to transport, there's no urgency in there, and so on, and we deliver the goods for, let's say, 0.13 cents or so. So that's the reason why cash management is a very interesting domain to us, because a lot of those complexities still exist there.
Thank you for that. Now, again, I know you briefly touched upon this, but I want to go a little bit deeper into it. The topic of, well, with contextual payments and payments itself, how does contextual banking work within the context of payments?
Yes, exactly. As I mentioned before, in our world, in the world of contextually, what we're trying to do, and independent from where the payments are coming from, if they're sitting in a batch file or they're sitting as in individual instruments, what we're trying to do is to find the business context of those payments. And what are they meant for? Is it payroll? Is the payment made to a vendor? What goods? What's the risk? Is there any revocability involved? Is cost and speed? Risk can also be related. And do we already have this relationship sitting in our system, so we know a bit more about what the risk appetite is of the corporate versus what the risk is involved into the payment itself. And if you factor in those, I would say those factors, there's many ways where really the bank also can become that trustful advisor and say, we would recommend you, instead of pushing it through an ACH, let's say, why don't we break it up and use a couple of rails that optimize on the various factors that might be interest you, which potentially might save you cost, might take away risk, or might balance cost and risk altogether. That's not the part where we are working quite hard, and I've done a lot of groundbreaking work to build algorithms between our groups, or in this case, two groups that are working on this. On one side, Barry with his payments group, where we do a lot of the work, particularly in our pre-processes and orchestration layer, where we can really start understanding on the context that comes in, that's being handed over by the channel. That's my part, where those interactions, and where we're trying to capture the intent of, for example, a payment, and hand that enriched data with the payment instruction over to the payment engine, who can do smart routing and execution optimization through its orchestration layer for the corporate itself.
Right, now let's shift gears a little bit here and focus specifically on your organization. Now, IGTB has their own contextual banking experience solution named CBX 18. Now, what can you tell us about that experience solution?
Yes. So what we have done, CBX as a product line exists already since 2006. And of course, we did the same thing what we have been asked for many years by the banks itself. And so provide as much of the product processor capabilities exposed for digital channels to the bank's clients itself. We should do very well. We're covering pretty much most of the domains today, ranging from liquidity management, trade, supply chain, finance, account services, and so on. And what we have done 3 years ago, we went back to pretty much back to the drawing table. It was also shortly before I came in, and we said, let's revamp and let's relook to those what we called a user journey. So what we first did is we built a catalog of around 400 user journeys. which cover all the domains that traditionally are there and still will remain there in the world of corporate banking, and say, how does these interactions look like? First of all, how can we simplify it? That was the first thing we did, trying to simplify those self-service experiences. And then we thought, like, how can we leverage things like predictive analytics and machine learning to really let the bank become way more proactive and, as I mentioned, more business aware. So all those 400 corporate banking use cases have been productized. So what we have done is we have built, I would say, a next generation digital layer that lands perfectly on the existing product processors that banks already have. And here and there, mix them, of course, with our own product processors for areas where there's renewal needed or where there's more contextuality needed as an overlay on those existing backend processes. So CBX 18 is a combination, I would say, of 400 productized user journeys that are exposed equally through UIs, mobile, tablet, and so on. Secondly, what we've done also in the platform itself, we treat interactions similarly between an API and a UI, because that's where we are progressing against. Interactions between bank and corporates are not limited to user interface anymore, but equally through APIs, and build whatever the touch point or the interaction is, it always goes through that same contextual layer where those recommendations are made. And it, of course, at the same time, that interaction layer doesn't live on its own. It, of course, relies on all the data sources that are in or outside the banks. And that's where I would call the harvesting and the massaging of those interactions will be, to turn them into way more contextual interactions with the bank. So that platform is a complete revamp. It's the basis at this moment for almost every cash management replacing we are doing in the market itself, because what we have seen is in the last 4 or 5 years, most banks spent all that time on replacing their retail or consumer banking platforms. The next wave we're seeing now, particularly in, I would say, quite heavily in the Middle East, Europe, and the US, that the same wave of replacement as part of transformation programs are being applied to the domain of cash management. And that's where we come in with our CBX 18 platform as a full-fledged end-to-end replacement of those cash management platforms.
Great. Now, I'm glad that you brought up the U.S. market here, because my last question is a little bit of a two-parter here. So what opportunities do you see in the U.S. market for contextual banking, and what are your organization's plans to do about it?
Yeah, thank you for asking that. So what we've seen is, as you know, Ryan, we have pretty much good coverage around the globe. You find this in many places, ranging from growing markets in Africa or in APAC. You see is we have a pretty good install base in the Middle East, in Europe, and other places. US is always a bit behind in terms of our penetration. So what we've done first is we completely revamped and expanded our team here. So we tripled the size of our business team and marketing efforts. That's one thing. So we created a bit more, I would say, product awareness into the US region. The second part, what we also done, is that the big part of our product leadership and particularly product management, we wanted to install into the region itself in the US. So although, for example, my responsibility is being responsible for our digital teams across the globe and our markets around the globe, I installed myself in New York City. Also, one of my peers, for example, on the payment side is US based, has a US background. So we pretty much shifted also our knowledge and our market alignment and attachment way more to the US and to really invest here. We're sitting in a market, if you look to at least my solution, there's around 200 cash management replacement happening each year. And we just want to have a bigger portion of those replacements. I think we're pretty well geared up to kind of do the same things we've done in the past at a higher pace, I would say, and with a better velocity in the US. So our focus is at this point, we're targeting the top 100 banks in the US, and we're focusing on cash management replacements there.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Herbert, for taking the time today to talk to us about contextual banking, and we hope to have you back on the podcast real soon.
Great. Thank you, Ryan. Thanks for hosting this.
That wraps up another episode of the Payments Journal podcast. If you're interested in being part of the podcast, please reach out to us at info@mercatoradvisorgroup.com. We hope you enjoyed this episode of the podcast, and we look forward to keeping you up to date with the latest payment news.